The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
The Sunday Papers on Off the Ball.
Indeed, it is the Sunday paper review here and Off the Ball, as it is every Sunday. Shane Hannan here with you, in for Joe this morning on this lovely Valentine's Day morning, Sunday, February the 14th, 2021. And I'll be joined very shortly in the company of Hector O'Hockagon and Maura Trasny-Callig. Around the next hour or so, we're going to run you through the best stories in the back pages on this fine Sunday morning. We are live, of course, as always, on the Off the Ball social channel, so youtube.com/offtheball. On the Off the Ball Facebook as well, and indeed on the Off the Ball Twitter, at Off the Ball. So if you want to get in touch, that is how. And of course, if you missed this or any other Sunday Papers podcast, you will get it back on the OTB Sports app, which is available to download for free on the App Store or the Play Store, and you can get us at otbsports.com as well. Before we get to Hector and Maura Trasny, I want to run you through the back pages, or the front pages of the sport, whatever way you want to look at it this morning. So the back page of the Irish Sun, you'll see there, capitulation. I think Hector will enjoy talking about this one. Klopp admits title is gone after new KO. So Liverpool going down to Leicester City 3-1 yesterday at the King Power Stadium. Cracking game as well, it has to be said. Bit of a mention as well, Guardiola in Sweet 16, Man City 3, Tottenham 0. So a 16th successive win for Man City yesterday. While Celtic eyeing up a fresh move for Burnley's Ireland star Robbie Brady. The Hoops wanted the winger last summer before he signed a one-year extension. So an interesting move there potentially for Robbie Brady. And rage against Le Machine. Rafael Ibanez has warned France they will face raging and overcharged players when they face Ireland today in the Six Nations. 3 o'clock, of course, that game. And we'll have updates from Andy Dunn across the afternoon on Off the Ball from one. Fabian Gatti's side, favourites to win this game, of course. And there's lots of negativity, I think, from the Ireland camp heading into this one. Not least with the injuries to Johnny Sexton and Conor Murray. The front page of the Observer Sport, May and England flying high again in six-try demolition, but win comes at cost of sickening injury to Willis. That was, of course, the injury to the Wasps flanker, Jack Willis, yesterday, while Klopp concedes Liverpool's title defence is over after another Alisson nightmare. That's the back of the Observer. The back page of the Sunday World then this morning, double Becker bust, Alisson Blunderland. I love that. That's absolutely fantastic. Alisson Blunderland. Once again, as Fleet Foxes fire 3 lead on, as Liverpool kiss title goodbye. You have at the bottom then, Assassin's Creed, baby-faced United boss wants to smile. And smile he does. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has told his stars to start putting a smile on his face. They, of course, taking on West Bromwich Albion away this afternoon. And that's a 2 o'clock kickoff. Live commentary and Off the Ball of that one. While Dram of Jamieson might be Irish cure, Ireland's rugby team have their backs to the wall as they prepare to face France in the second round of the Six Nations at the Aviva Stadium this afternoon. And loads of other stuff in the tabloids as well this morning. The Sunday Mirror has Gunderful. Ilchai hits double as ruthless City hammer Spurs to make it 16 wins in a row and stride on at the top. That, of course, Ilchai Gundogan getting a brace for Manchester City in their 3-0 win over Spurs yesterday. Irish side is right up against it. Reece Ruddock admits it'll take a huge step up for understrength Ireland to pull off a Six Nations victory at home to France today. Again, the coverage of Klopp saying the title has gone for Liverpool. And Solskjaer, cop taunt. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer believes Manchester United deserve credit for keeping the title race alive. While Jurgen Klopp has spent the season moaning about injuries and tiredness, Solskjaer pointed out that United and their table-topping rivals City have not looked for any excuses. So shots fired on that one by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. The back of the Sunday People then this morning. Cop KO. Klopp admits Liverpool out of title race after King Power collapse. All guns blazing, Ilchai bags another double as ruthless City take win streak to 16. And again, that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer dig at Jurgen Klopp and his Liverpool team after their defeat yesterday. The sports section of the Sunday Times newspaper this morning then on Valentine's Day, Alisson in Blunderland. Keepers mix up with Ozan Kabak condemns Liverpool to another defeat. An angry Klopp concedes title race after defeat, while Wales beat 14-man Scotland 25-24. As England hand Italy 29th straight Six Nations loss. So that's the back page of the Sunday Times this morning. The back page then of the Irish Mail on Sunday, March is on. Leagues could commence next month, with GAA expected to have their elite status restored. So the Allianz Leagues, this is a story by Michael Clifford on the back page of the Mail on Sunday. The leagues could start by the end of March, after the Intercounty game has its Level 5 exemption restored this month, a leading official has claimed. We also have Henderson looks to lift Ireland for French test. Ian Henderson, of course, of Ulster, captaining Ireland in that game against the French today in the Six Nations. More coverage as well of Klopp throwing in the towel. And finally, the back page of the Sunday Independent. this morning. It's all over for us. Klopp concedes title as Leicester stun Reds. I wish this was a happier paper review for Liverpool fans out there, but it's not. And captaincy and honour for Henderson. That's halfbacks John Cooney and Harry Byrne took part in yesterday's Ireland's captain's run at Lansdowne Road ahead of this afternoon's Guinness Six Nations. And mentions, of course, a couple of the pieces we'll be getting into with Hector Amor-Trasa and Neil Francis. I cannot remember a worse halfback pairing being selected to play for Ireland. And Colm O'Rourke, time has come to get kids back playing and relieve some of this misery. That's page 7 of the Sunday Independent Sports section. So we will get to that with more interest in Hector, who I should introduce properly. Hector O'Hockagon, of course, as you know, the broadcaster and Navin man. And recently, he's been keeping me company on drives from Monaghan up to Dublin as well with the Tommy and Hector podcast with Loretta Blewett, which you'll get in all the usual podcast places. Good morning to you, Hector, and also good morning to Mór Trasna Cailleach, the broadcaster. All-rounder, really. Accredited sports psychologist, medical student, and now living in Monaghan, most importantly, Mór Trasna, I have to introduce you that way. So good morning to you both.
Morning.
Good morning.
Mór Trasna. How are you, Shane?
Not too bad now, keeping well. But we should, I guess, mention, first of all, Mór Trasna's vaccine. So this was you announced this on social media yesterday, Mór Trasna. It's always good to see someone you know getting a vaccine. And now you work on the front lines as well. So talk to us about what that experience was like for you.
Yeah, I was delighted to get one. It's the kind of thing where if you were told you must be there at 3 a.m. in the morning and you must walk backwards and on your head and inject it into your eyeball, I would have said, sure, yeah, no bother. Tell me when and where. So I did. I got there yesterday and I got the AstraZeneca vaccine. That's just begun to be reeled out this week in Ireland. I've had other people in my class and other people I've been working with, they've been getting the Pfizer and the Moderna ones. And we're just seeing now, you know, different people have different side effects. And so I've put it up on my social media, like yourself, because I was delighted, you know, because it's a sign that things are on the way back, you know, that when you see people getting the vaccine and when you know yourself, that you're knowing people, it's just great for the head to see that it's happening. And you might be thinking, okay, it's not me yet, but I'm seeing people, so it's all good. This is my thinking, and I was really happy with it, so I sent it out and I got a few well-meaning messages back saying, you know, oh, AstraZeneca, watch that bad boy later in a few hours, you know. And I was thinking, oh, sure, I'll be grand, you know. So I got the vaccine at 11:30 yesterday, went home, did a few jobs, did some homework, watched a bit of TV, watched a bit of the rugby. At 6 o'clock, I began to feel the glands in my neck get a bit, I suppose, glandy, for the want of a better phrase. You know, so I could feel it a bit kind of glandular, but that was fine. And I was thinking, you know, oh, I kind of hope I do mount some kind of immune response, because what if they've just injected me like with a dud or something? I was beginning to get worried that I wasn't seeing anything, because I'd gotten the warnings from people who got it during the week. And I was sitting on the couch, I was watching the Tommy Tiernan show last night. I even poured myself a glass of red, you know, Saturday night, you know, living the high life. And at around 10:30, my God, it just hit me. It was kind of muscle pain, joint pain, the sweats, no energy. Where I got the injection was really, really sore. And obviously we were all familiar with flu jabs and different types of jabs, and it'd be a bit sore, but this was like, can't touch it, painful. And it was feeling really, really weird. And I know, like, your man was thinking, you're a hypochondriac, shut up. But I said, you just have to go to bed. I can barely keep my eyes open. He's like, what? You're wasting wine. I'm like, I know, I can't drink it. And I went out to the kitchen to take some ibuprofen. And I just remember pouring a glass of water and trying to drink it. And my hand actually had the shakes, like somebody who's going through the DTs or something. It was unbelievable. And I went upstairs to bed and I put loads of blankets on me, and I was still really cold and it was getting really hot and really cold, like what we would call, like, you know, Rigers and myalgia in med world. And that kept going throughout the night, and I finally fell into really fitful sleep and woke up at 5 a.m. again. And again, a lot of that pain had died away, but I was just fatigued. And at this stage now, I'm definitely over the worst of it, and I would go through it for a week if I had to, because it's certainly better than the alternative. But it seems, by looking at the evidence that's now coming in from England in particular, because obviously they've injected thousands of people with this, more so than we have here at this stage, it seems the younger you are, the more violent, for the want of a better phrase, your immune response is to it. But apparently the second one will be a walk in the park, whereas the people who got the Pfizer one, they'll be feeling it in round two. So this is what I've been told.
Jesus.
So, yeah. But I mean, it just goes to show, you see, like, it's a novel virus. Our bodies have never had to deal with this. So even when you get the flu vaccine, your body's got a little bit of familiarity. You know, it's like, oh, it's either had the flu, or it's been exposed to it, or it's been exposed to the vaccine or something. Our bodies have never felt anything like this. And as far as I know, I didn't have COVID at any stage during the last year, even though we know sometimes you could be asymptomatic. But as far as I know, I didn't have it. So my body was just like, what the hell is this? I'm dealing with it. And it dealt with it. And actually, that just kind of goes to show how amazing the human body is, because it's about 24 hours now, just about, since I got the vaccine. And apparently within 3 weeks, I'll have a fair amount of protection. They found that by the end of the 12 weeks, 2/3 of the people who've had it, if you happen to catch COVID, your viral load is dropped by 2/3. And then once you get your second vaccine within a few weeks after that, hopefully you're away with it. And just for peace of mind, it's great, because just the worries. And I didn't realize how stressful it was when you're, you know, putting on your PPE and taking it off and going from patient to patient. You're just always afraid. And I didn't realize until Christmas arrives, I had some time off over Christmas, and then I had some home study for a lot of the month of January. I didn't actually realize I was carrying a lot of stress of the fear of, and it's funny, and of course you're worried about catching it yourself, but you're more worried about passing it on to other people. And before Christmas, I was involved in pediatrics and neonates, and I was dealing with obstetrics and pregnant women and vulnerable babies, and you're just terrified of passing it on, you know. So just the fact that I'll take this all day and I take it for a week, and the only reason I'm kind of telling people it's happened this way, it's just so that you know to expect it and you don't freak out when the chills hit. I know it's only going to be for a few hours, but you're well on your way to getting life back to normal and hopefully going back to matches and going to concerts and feeling people's viral load while we're on top of each other in coppers. I can't wait.
See, I'm a relative newbie to this. I'm kind of fearful of the COVID test itself. This swab up the brain and swab up the nose and back of your throat. Hector, I guess you with the podcast have to get tested quite regularly. So what's do you enjoy getting tested? Is it unpleasant? What's the situation for you?
I suppose we because we myself and Tommy and Loretta get together in a garden shed every Tuesday, we had to do something to keep it going during lockdown. So we got this AG antigen test. It's a rapid 24-hour test from Covisal, I think is the company, out of Clonmel. And you buy a pack of 25. The swabs are there, the whole thing. It's basically like, and then you drop your... The hard thing was a nurse came and showed us how to do it the first time. I think the fear of anyone who hasn't got a COVID test is that when they put the nasal swab into your nose, how far can it go? It's almost like a horror movie. You think, oh my God, does this cavern go on forever and goes on forever? And then finally you hit a wall. Once you've hit that wall at the back of your nose the first time and you get that strange sensation, it's not painful. It's just very uncomfortable. And then they twist it a little bit and then your nose starts running or your eyes start really watering quickly. It's a strong tickle. It's an irritant, and then they take it out, you put it in the thing and you drop it on. It's almost like a pregnancy test, and then you wait 15 minutes. But once you have it done once, I think the fear factor is going away. You think your nose is going to start bleeding, you think it's going to go back and hit your brain, but I can test myself now on a Tuesday morning. Again, it's a layer of battling with this thing and saying, we're going to get to grips with this thing, and it's not going to stop me doing what I have to do for that particular day. So for that Tuesday, I'm COVID free, and so is Tommy and so is Loretta. It doesn't mean to say we wouldn't get it on the Wednesday, but just hearing Maura Trasa there talking about the vaccination and getting the side effects, we need to get that out there. We need to hear from people who are getting the vaccine instead of the negativity around all of it that surrounds it, that we will get back to normal.
I was going to start with the rugby stories, but I guess this conversation kind of leads nicely into Colm O'Rourke's piece in the Sunday Independent, first of all. And so page 7 of the sports section, Sunday Independent today, and it kind of, it's a strange one. Get kids back playing and relieve some of this misery. Hector, he's a Meath legend, Colm O'Rourke, and a secondary school principal as well. So I guess the gulf of what he's saying here, he says, leadership is about giving hope, not plunging people into darkness and uncertainty. The mood of everyone involved in GAA clubs hit a new low last week as we were pointed toward Easter and beyond. Getting young people back training is far more important than inter-county activity. Young people have been in an open prison for most of the last 11 months without any release date. Their well-being is not good. Hector, what was your reaction to reading? I know you're a GAA coach yourself.
Having been in the school, and I know Colm, he's talking with his principal's hat on here as well, but me, we're coaching young minors, lads that won an under-16 championship in Galway, and we're going into a minor season now. We were never so blessed and so delighted that we got through a season last year where we went through all the protocols. We had our COVID officers. We all did the basics. We all filled out our return to plays every single training session. We all checked temperatures. We all did the things. And it was unbelievable to think that we did get back and play from the start, the 20th of June, to finishing a Galway under-16 championship around the second week in September. Teenagers have no voice. regarding COVID. And it's just so frustrating that for them as a 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 year old, that they can't get back to their clubs at the moment, or when they will get back to their clubs. Now, it's just a huge escape for them. It's the banter. It's the running to take the balls out of the bag. I don't know what is the impact, or is there any studies done on? We shouldn't rush back into opening up the whole country, but we definitely need to look at when the juvenile clubs can get back training. That's so vital for every parish, no matter how big the club is, how small the club is, for those teenagers of the parish to get back and be mingling on the pitch safely under COVID guidelines, to have some sort of crack, because there's no crack at the moment as a 14, 15, 16, 17 year old. And when you take away the gaff from these kids, I mean, O'Rourke says, you know, in general, we try to get young people away from being hooked on their devices. But now this is a necessity. The school it's beamed into their homes. We need a switch off time, and organized collecting training provides that. He's so true, because in my house, I have a 15 and 16 year old. There's only so much Xbox they can play. They're actually getting bored with the Xbox now, even though they're playing Division 1 FIFA level. They've gone back to Fortnite now at 15 and 16, which is a huge thing, because I thought they were gone from that. But, you know, you say, teenagers, they'll be grand. Put them outside, get outside, go outside and kick ball. Go outside, it's freezing cold, it's raining, the grass is soaking wet, you're freezing, your hands are free. Like, so there's just two sides to this story. I can see where he's coming from. We shouldn't rush back into it either. We shouldn't be worrying about inter-county stuff. We should be worrying about the teenagers and those clubs around the country that could do so much by having one or two training sessions around the country when it's safe to do so.
Yeah, I mean, Mortrasa, you most certainly work on the front lines, and I had to screenshot one of your replies. Someone had tweeted you back, I think, asking why in fact you skipped to the top of the queue to get the COVID vaccine, and your reply, I would assume being on wards, dealing with patients in multiple hospital and community care settings, and working in ICU probably did. So that is why Mortrasa got the vaccine before some of us. So what's your opinion on what Colm O'Rourke is saying here? I mean, he's got a point with the mental health, and as Hector mentions, kids are glued to their phones, and it reminds me of the famous photograph of, you know, Tiger Woods teeing off something like 20, 25 years ago, when everyone is sitting there gawking at him and taking this moment in and taking a mental image with their heads almost. But nowadays it's everyone's, you know, holding the camera phone up when they see something like Tiger Woods driving, which is an extraordinary thing to witness. But we're all buried in our phones, and teenagers are guilty more than anyone. But do you agree with Colm O'Rourke here?
Yes and no. Like, for example, Hector is absolutely right, and I fully agree with you that children and teenagers have no voice whatsoever. They have been ignored, pushed to one side, because they don't have an expensive lobby group fighting for them. That's first and foremost. And it's not today or yesterday this began. This has been a problem in this country from day one. Like yesterday, the Children's Ombudsman, Niall Muldoon, he was on the radio making the case to say we need to get kids back to school. Not just sport, but just to get every child back to school, because we're seeing the ill effects that it's causing, because some children don't have a good life at home for a start. For some of them, school is an escape. For some of them, it's progressing of intellectual abilities. For some of them, it's special needs. For some of them, it's going out and have the banter. For some of them, it's to go off someday and meet people and go off and become whatever it is they want to be when they go up. We now know, and there is evidence, that, you know, children might be regressing. And this is something that's been worrying a lot of paediatricians, worrying psychologists, counsellors. And we also know that a lot of this is because kids aren't in school, and the ISPCC as well are getting increases. So that's neither here nor there. That is absolutely right that this is being highlighted, and it's far too late. And the reason it's too late being highlighted is because they didn't have any voice at the table, and that is wrong. And that has been happening for years. The Colm O'Rourke angle, I suppose, what makes me a little bit eye-rolly at it is that I feel this is very like before Christmas, when we had gym owners, not all, but a large significant cohort, jumping up and down saying, we need gyms for mental health. We do not need gyms for mental health. Going to the gym is not going to cure you of your depressive disorder or anxiety. You cannot expect exercise to cure mental health ills. It can help life. It can help you feel better about yourself. But what you need is movement and not going to the gym. And I just feel now all of a sudden people are getting onto the what about the children bandwagon. And that bandwagon should have always been there. Like, for example, before Christmas, we found out that the country is short 155 psychiatrists. We don't have enough counsellors. We don't have enough psychologists. We know children are suffering and nobody is doing anything about it. So this comes back to government. Colm is absolutely right. They should be out and about. They should be playing. the killer of all of this, we know all these facts now. We've seen the year we've put in. It's okay for the likes of me, even, because at least I get to go to hospital every once in a while and get out of the house. And because I was involved in Gaelic Games, which was class as elite but isn't anymore, I was able to travel about a bit. And that gave my head a great relief as well. But we saw Professor Paddy Mallon. He sent out data there during the week. I don't know if you guys saw it. He's the infectious diseases specialist. And he was able to point out with data that we know now that we imported all the new cases that came in our second wave and probably in our third wave. And if we had managed the country properly after the way we locked it down the first time, we wouldn't be in this situation. Schools would be open, kids would be playing football, kids would be at their art classes, kids would be at drama classes, because it's not just sport. Like, for some people, sport is the be-all and end-all, like us. There's a lot of people out there who need to go to the National Concert Hall, or need to go see dramas, or need to go to art galleries, and this isn't being done. It all comes back to government aren't handling this properly. They just aren't. They're not listening to advice. They're not taking anything on board. Living with COVID, we've learned for the last year, living with COVID is a recipe for illness, death, destruction, economic collapse, and mental health difficulties. And what are they trying to do? The same thing again. I don't understand. It's a definition of madness, trying to do the same, even the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And this call now to say, get kids out to sport. Sport is not a priority when they're not in school. The first thing is get them into school. I think school should be number one. Forget builders, forget economics, forget this, that and the other. They'll all recover. But number one priority has to be getting those kids back to school. And they've been left behind and it is wrong. And the day will come, they're going to grow up and they're going to ask, why didn't we look after them? And we didn't. And these articles, I just feel like it's not helpful. It's like they need to be getting out there. They do. But what are we doing about it instead of complaining and whining? And I just feel we're not doing enough.
Yeah, it's interesting because Colm is making the point, I guess, to read between the lines, that the extracurricular activities in schools are the things people remember from their school days. So he even writes here, few remember what happened in classes after they leave school, but they recall games, events, training, musicals, and all the other things that are very much a part of school life, the learning by experience. Much of this is gone now.
Yeah, they do. But I suppose this is what exercises me. We know all this. We have reams of academic data from Year Dot saying kids need activity. We all need activity. We're social beings. We know this. And what's our government doing? They're living with COVID. They're now doing a weird little merry dance by saying, oh, if you come from this country or that country, we're going to quarantine you. It's like they don't want to be seen to be doing a U-turn. In the meantime, beyond all this, everyone is suffering from one way, shape or form, but people are dying. Our hospitals are still full. And I cannot understand why somebody go, let kids out to play, saying we don't have data, any scientific evidence to suggest underage training or games was a contributing factor to the spread of COVID, yet our young people remain locked up. That is incendiary language. Like, we don't have this data because our public health specialists aren't given enough funding to do their job properly. There isn't enough of them. So, well, like when people go on the radio and TV saying only X amount is related back to restaurants or Y amount related back to flights, it's because they don't have the people to collect the data and they're only collecting back 2 days. So we have flawed data to begin with. So it's just a real shame that when we had our first lockdown where we really did feel like we were all in this together and nobody had a time easy, not one of us. But we, for once, for a few weeks, the whole country was on the same page. And I'm just so disappointed that those in charge blew it, and people have, and forget everything else, misery and children and sport and school, people have died, and I just can't forgive that or forget it.
Yeah, strong words, fair points as well from both of you. It is a really interesting piece, definitely going to get some discussions and debates and maybe even arguments going in houses across Ireland this morning and this afternoon. That's Colm O'Rourke on page 7 of the Sunday Independent talking about getting kids back playing. There is probably a more balanced piece, I guess you call it, in the not that Colm O'Rourke's piece isn't balanced, but Michael Foley writing in the Sunday Times as well, roadmap with no start point. The news that the GAA season has been pushed back again has revealed the breakdown in communication. I guess he's referring back to the GAA having special status to complete their season last year and get those games played, but that now he's saying as long as the GAA need more public money to even run an intercounty season, this is no time to rock boats, which is fair. We all love the GAA, but Hector, it, I guess, has to take a back seat given everything Moira Tressa has said there. And way down the priority list is the GAA Championship, really.
Yeah, there's a bigger picture, and Moira Tressa has hit on it from her angle perfectly, and where she's coming from, it's all very, very true. We're not dealing with this properly, and there's a lot of people out there. I know the GAA isn't the be-all and end-all. There's a lot of people out there saying the GAA had preference over everything last year, that it was green carded, it was green lit to do what they wanted to do. So I just think we need to tread carefully there. Yeah, and it's not the be-all and end-all. It definitely is not. But sometimes you think that there's nothing else in this country than GAA, and it was a very valid point. There's an awful lot more that teenagers can be doing. There's an awful lot more important things than the GAA as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, fingers crossed we'll get back to matches and hugs and pints of lovely creamy stout sometime soon.
But actually, Shane, before we go away from that, I do think we should mention, I'm sorry to butt in, but I just thought Dermot Crowe's piece speaking about the GAA was very beautifully written. Mm. And I think it met the two things very, very well, the sense and the emotions, and the fact that the GAA means so much to so many people. But, you know, so do people mean a lot to people. And he's just speaking about the Laois Club Championship and, you know, how that has been left unfinished and other ones. And then, you know, talking about, you know, people who are involved in it. And then all of a sudden it just knits into a 42-year-old woman called Sinéad Mullan, a teacher, part of the local GAA community. And her father, Seamus, played on the last Greig team to win the county title. And she died. She died suddenly at the age of 42. And It's just the way it's written very, very well. She was in great form, no bother, and her brother went to see her last Sunday and she was dead in the bed. She had COVID. We all then got it from being in the room with her. He recalls how she offered Irish classes to families during lockdown and distributed all donations to the GAA club, where she'd been an active fundraiser. Instead of flowers, the family asked for donations in her memory, and a GoFundMe page was established, which quickly raised almost €40,000. I didn't really take it as seriously as it probably was until it hit home. I was thinking of football the whole time. When something like this happens, it makes you a bit more aware. And I think that's a really good way of putting it. We can care about football and we can care about keeping people healthy and acknowledge the tragedies that are happening, and also acknowledge the tragedy of people not being able to do what it is we want to do. And I just thought it was very, very well written, that paid tribute to somebody who was obviously very loved and much too young to die, but also says we just want to play our games, and said it in a really nice way where nobody could accuse anyone of being partisan or playing for one group over another, if that makes sense. It's just very beautifully done, where life and death all comes together and we're all just trying to get along, you know?
Yeah,
really. Yeah, it is a good piece, Dermot Crowe. But as well as that, we talk about teenagers have no voice. Laois football has no voice. Laois Club football Laois Club football isn't in the shop window. But for the first time ever in such a long time, the champions of Laois senior football have been knocked out, and it was a chance for a new club champion to come along in Laois. I mean, Port Laois had been knocked out for the first time in I don't know how many years. And then you can highlight the piece. It's all about the unfinished club championships and semi-finals and finals. I mean, when you look at those four, the Laois senior football semi-finals, Ballyfin versus Port Arlington, Emo versus Grange Cullen. I mean, for the first time in 6,000 years, Port Laois weren't in a semi-final. And who knows whoever will win it. It's a really good piece by that. Yeah. And last autumn, as he says on the top of Dermot Crowe, a year of unexpected events and abnormal occurrences. Port Laois lost their grip on the Laois Senior Football Championship. Like, I mean, that was a seismic shift in club football in Laois. And who knows, will those games ever be finished? But it is, as Mort Rass has said, it's a very nice piece by Dermot Crowe.
Yeah, very well highlighted by Dermot, and a real human story, as you mentioned as well, Mort Rass. So straining at the Laois of all the fixtures that went unfinished last year, the Laois Football Championship holds special significance. That's a piece by Dermot Crowe in the Sunday Independent. And as Hector mentioned, he runs through the list of unfinished business, 2020 leftovers, the county finals that never got played, the likes of Naoimh Connell versus Kilcar in the Donegal football final. You have the Cork football final between Castlehaven and Nemo Rangers, loads of hurling finals as well. So really good piece by Dermot Crowe in the Sunday Independent as well this morning. We should touch on the 3 o'clock game this afternoon at the Aviva Stadium, Ireland against France. Hoping to bounce back from that very disappointing defeat to the Welsh last week. The injuries, of course, midweek to Conor Murray and Johnny Sexton won't help. James Ryan is out as well. Billy Burns will show up today. And we have a very tough game against the French today. But we will have updates from Andy Dunn, as I mentioned, throughout the day and off the ball. Probably start with Neil Francis's piece, I think. Page 2 of the Sunday Independent sports section here, where Neil Francis really, really sticks the boot into Irish team selections here, guys.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, Mark Tracy, you take it.
No, work away. I just, to be honest, I read the piece and, yeah, he does. But because it's Neil Francis, I don't give it much weight, because some of his opinions have really riled me the wrong way over the last few years. So I just think he can be mean without needing to be at times, and mean-mouthed about people and different groups of people. And I just feel like that's the gauge I have to give to all his articles, to be honest.
Yeah, I suppose he does put the boot in. Sometimes you can put the boot in before a ball has been kicked. And we seem to be praising this French team like they're the second coming. Like this is the greatest French team we've ever seen. I mean, France can be absolutely brilliant or absolutely shite. So just because they have DuPont and a few of these players coming and they did rattle off 50 against Italy, but there's nothing. Why? It's as if I feel there's a little bit because of the way the week has gone with Johnny Sexton and the stuff coming out in the papers from the French doctor saying about Johnny's fitness and stuff. That and now with all these changes, that we're almost conceding this to the French, that this is an unbelievable French team and they're going to win today. I mean, we could put in a serious effort here, but Neil Francis he's put the boot in. Coach's bad calls leave us without much of a shout. And halfway down the paragraph, he goes, it's hard to say, but I've been watching them and playing rugby for over 50 years. You know, it's a big statement, and I cannot remember a worse half-back line pairing being selected for Ireland. I mean, it's definitely there's a little bit of bitterness here, and he's given us no chance before a ball has been kicked. I just don't know. I think we have a little chance today. I think the weather's going to play a big part, but. It's an interesting piece about selection. What are they supposed to do? Who are they supposed to put in there? He's getting stuck into Andy Farrell as well.
I guess Andy Farrell's arm has been twisted in the injuries. He has no choice.
Absolutely.
Putting some of these guys out. He mentions as well, Neil Francis, in this piece in the Sunday Independent, going back 21 years ago and comparing then to now. So he says, we are not far away from the night of the long knives. Remember back in February 2000 when Wazza, that's Warren Gatland, took Ireland over to Twickenham and lost 50-18. And then he references what happened thereafter, and hopefully we'll have more of the same today. Made some changes, big changes. Ronan O'Gara for David Humphreys, Peter Stringer for Tom Tierney, John Hayes for Paul Wallace, Bob Casey gone, Dean O'Quinnigan gone, Justin Bishop gone, Kevin Maggs, Conor O'Shea gone. 9 players dispatched in a ruthless fashion. The next Saturday they saw off Scotland 44-22, Italy 60-13, and a first win in Paris in years, 27-25. So, as you've mentioned, Andy Farrell's had his turn by this, but we would love a reaction like they had in 2000.
I think we can all be guilty as well of going, oh geez, Ireland lost that last week, and we can name two incidents right away, which is obviously sending off Peter O'Mahony and Billy Burns misfiring. A team doesn't lose because one player doesn't perform one skill at a critical time. You know, it's a team performance to begin with for a start. And I just think, like, we lost the run of ourselves a little bit. That was a 14-man team for most of that match, you know, and we still were within a kick of a ball at the end. And I just think that people can be very harsh on these. And you can say, oh, they're meant to be professional players, they're meant to be performing. But like every team in the world in every sport, they are suffering the effects of a pandemic. And the Irish team is short. We know this. We know it doesn't have the depth to cope with injuries, which we're seeing this week in particular. Is that Andy Farrell's fault? Like, I was shocked when I saw the article next to Neil Francis is Brendan Fanning. And you might say, have you been under a stone? I didn't know this. David Nusafora, who's meant to be in charge of all this, is zooming us from Australia.
Yeah.
Like, I was shocked by that.
Yeah, this is Brendan Fanning's piece. It mentions it. It's mentioned a couple of other places as well in other papers. So I hadn't realised it either, to be honest. It says David Nusafora in Australia, seemingly he has been zooming and Skyping and mastering the wonders of modern technology to wade through the business of contracting players at national and provincial level, but it's not working too well. And he goes on to say, Farrell may have been woefully slow out of the traps in dealing with key issues around his coaching management setup and how his team plays, but the background picture has to be filled in by the man who appointed him, David Nusafora. So, interesting
and
thoughts.
His relationship with Leinster, the biggest source of players for the Irish national and provincial system, has been at times woeful. For that situation to have endured in a structure that prides itself on being high functioning is madness. So there's a lot of things wrong in the background here, if you ask me, and I'm only looking at it from the outside looking in, and I'm not seeing as much of rugby as I would have obviously in previous years because of the world we're living in right now. But I'm just thinking, you need your man on the ground. Like, I can't understand this. And then you see that distance is handy as well, because it just throws all the blame on Andy Farrell. And I'm not saying he's perfect. Yeah. I'm not saying he's made perfect decisions. Evidently he hasn't. But like, what's a man to do when he hasn't been given all the tools to begin with?
I said last night on Twitter after the Welsh match, the Scotland-Wales match was absolutely superb last night. But I says, what's the Welsh for jammy? I mean, two red cards. They were good, and they were great defensively. But that was a cracking match last night. I was so frustrated for Scotland. Scotland had the energy and the zip and the feeling in the Scottish bones yesterday that this was their time, and they had the beating of them. And as Mark Trassa said, we played brilliantly last week, but we were a man down in elite sport. 14 versus 15 is 99.9 times you're not going to beat them in that 14 versus 15. We nearly did, but again, the Scots went down a man last night. Controversial in some ways to the week before with Peter O'Mahony, but I really felt for Scotland last night. I really thought this was their year. And the Welsh, I got a lot of answers for the Welsh word for jammy, but there was one shining light. Did you see the match last night?
Yeah, some of it. Yeah, most of it.
This guy, Rhys Zamit. Shane, did you see it?
I didn't see this match, no.
He's this young Welsh via Malta and Tunisian parents. Yeah. He's the fastest guy in the English Premiership.
He scored the two tries. Yes, yes.
The speed of him, yeah.
Oh, my. The speed of him and the kick off a boot in the second half. But Rhys Zamit comes of age with two crucial tries. It lit up a thrilling battle. But I really felt for the Scots. They were better. They were more inventive. Stuart Hogg was incredible. I just felt that was a miss. And again, it was a red card for Wales. I could imagine what they were saying going into the dressing room after that match, going, how in the name of Jesus did we do that? But we've two wins out of two. The Welsh have two wins out of two. The Welsh have had two games and two players have been sent off against them. And it has changed the whole landscape of this Six Nations. But Rhys Zamit, if you haven't seen it yesterday, that was a superb game. And Andy Bull writes in the Sunday Times, mercy, tell me you were reading this because you want to relive a desperate, long-lasting, heart-pumping, nail-biting tear-up of a game, not because you want to know what you've missed. It was one of the great games, and I just felt sorry for the Scots. And we loved the Scots last week. We absolutely adored the Scots last week in Twickenham, but we felt for them yesterday.
Yeah. It is that Rhys Zamit, actually, he really reminded me of Shane Williams back in his day. You know, a small, tight man. You'd never think, how could he be any good at rugby? But the speed of him and the
zip
and just what he was doing. He was a big factor for Wales yesterday, beyond the whole, you know, red card and everything. And that's what Wales do. Every few years, they bring on somebody zingy, and that zinginess goes far. And I suppose if I was to be very, very elementary and rudimentary about it, Ireland seems to be lacking the zinginess right now.
Zinginess.
Yeah, a lack of zinginess.
Yeah. It's a new word for me today. Let's hope France don't have too much zinginess today. But it is a results-based business. You mentioned, like, Wales have got those two wins, whether we like it or not. Ireland, if they were to lose today, would be the first Irish team since the Six Nations became six in 2000 to lose their first two games, which is not a record we want. And a lot of the coverage is negative around the Irish team today, but if they were to get the result today, that totally changes. Paul Kimmage has a lovely piece as well, a nice short piece as well, in the Sunday Independent. Fond memories when Paris was another planet. So he's talking about an interview he had with Fabien Galthi, of France, of course, the French coach. And basically, he got a lift with him as well afterwards. So they were happened to be staying in the same place in Paris after an interview. He was living in the Parisian suburb of Boulogne-Billancourt at the time, which, as it happened, was also where I was headed. He pointed his car, a top-end Renault, towards the National 118, and we crossed the Seine at the Pont de Sèvres. This has just got me, it's just got me looking for travel again. This is great. It's like a little trip to Paris. Yeah.
I'll tell you a funny story on Renault cars. I did a hang-in with Hector years ago. I got to pick people like Shea Given. I went to Newcastle to hang with him. I picked Tommy Tierney. I went to New York to hang with him. I just hung with Sean Boylan and people I just wanted to hang with, hanging with Hector. So one of them was Bertie Ahern. He was president of Taoiseach at the time, president of the European Union. And I rang Bertie Ahern and I rang his press office. And 6 weeks passed. And then all of a sudden, be in Drumcondra in St. Luke's at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. I was in Galway. Nobody knew what I had to mobilize the crew. So we arrived at St. Luke's. I was whisked away in the back of a load of cars, going up to Farmley for my breakfast, through the streets of Stonybatter in a cortege of high-powered BMWs at about 9:30. He said, the next day, Hector, we're flying to France. You're coming with me on the government jet. I said, this is great. This is hanging with Hector. And I said, so we were like pigs in shite. Roscoe, the cameraman, was loving this. So the next morning, we flew to Paris. He had a meeting in Paris. So we flew to Orly Airport, I think. And I was expecting the VIP red carpet. We had just flown in the leader of one country to meet the leader of another. We were there like a fly on the wall documentary crew. We walked out of the airport off the private jet to a fleet of high-end Renaults.
As you do.
They were high-end.
They were high-end Renaults. And Paul Kimmage says about it, every time any VIP is always transported in the car of the French, no BMWs, no Lexuses, no nothing over there. It was a high-end cortege of Renaults.
The French love the Renaults, let me tell you, and they're va-va-boom.
Yeah.
it's great. And Kimmage paints this piece of France as this lovely place and memories of his Tour de France exploits over there and living over there. And it kind of, it makes us love France, but until 3 o'clock today, of course, when we get to hit it.
I think we have a chance. I think we need to get pumped up about it. You know, we can be glorifying this French team. Let's see what they're like when the rain is coming in sideways in their faces and the wind is howling down on a blustery afternoon at the Aviva.
Yeah, a nice paragraph as well in Paul Kimmage's piece for Valentine's Day. I think there's a scene in Dix Pourcent, the French TV series trading as Call My Agent on Netflix, that captures that taste of France brilliantly. Sigourney Weaver has just stepped off a long flight from Los Angeles and has barely cleared customs at Aeroport Charles de Gaulle when she mainlines a macaron from La Durée, and the sheer joy on her face as she's chauffeured into Paris, not just breathing, but inhaling every brick. J'adore Paris. So beautiful, beautiful words on this Valentine's Day, folks.
God, I just love people inhale outside my 5K, but my standards are obviously lower than Scorny.
Well, listen, inhaling the lovely fresh country air of Monaghan is not a bad second to Paris.
J'adore Monaghan.
J'adore
Galliv. Let me back rapid.
Fair. There's loads of other great pieces around the rugby we should mention as well. Tommy Conlon in the Sunday Independent as well, just being thankful that sport is on, that we have sport to talk about and look forward to. I think lockdown one, we were all spending, you know, getting nostalgic and watching old games back on tapes. And at least now we have games like today to look forward to. You know, the highs and lows of a game against France and the Six Nations, which is great. Like Hugh Farrelly in the Irish Mail on Sunday, a little bit more negative as well. He's calling Irish rugby a shambles. And mentions the David Nusafora stuff as well, I think. And then Mark Gallagher's piece on concussion as well, which is kind of...
That was a very good piece, yeah.
Really
I
good
felt
piece.
It was good because it wasn't just focusing on rugby. It's an issue all sports have. And he went to the bother of going to DCU and seeing what the data is. And it turns out, well, everybody seems to know right now what the symptoms of concussion are. And they're different to everyone and different to... Just because you were concussed on Tuesday and get another concussion in 3 months' time, it might feel totally differently. But the culture of not wanting to let your team down. So the conversation needs to evolve now from recognising concussion. It has to evolve to coaches letting their players know that to be a good team player, you got to tell us when you're feeling concussed, and people need to not get any repercussions if they're saying, I think I'm concussed, I need to step out here. Because this is the problem. We're seeing all over players getting concussed and trying to continue playing. They need to be taken away for their own safety, and our culture needs to change to a bit like if I break my leg, God forbid, or something, that you just say, I can't play on any longer. And a concussion can do a lot more damage than playing on a pulled tendon or ligament. It just can. And we're seeing the effects of that now. We're seeing it with older players and lots of different sports, how it can affect their neurology in later years. And it's not good enough. And I think as we're all getting fitter and stronger, we need to protect our people, to be honest. And I just thought it was very good the way, yeah, it wasn't just looking at, you know, how many concussions has Johnny Sexton had or hasn't. That's none of our business. Our business is knowing that if our kids are playing rugby or our relatives or our friends, that people are safe. And I'm not sure we're doing enough about that.
Yeah, I guess.
That's a good point. I know from young lads as well in GAA, and as you get 16, 17, the tackles are getting stronger. There can be knees into the head when you go down blocking a ball. They think, oh, it's just my head. It's just my head. If it was a broken ankle or a broken elbow or a pulled hamstring or something, they'll be up really quick going, I think my hamstring is gone, I need to come off. Whereas if they get a knock on the head, they take it for granted. And it's a very valid point. We need to educate on the importance of minding the head.
Yeah, and concussion substitutes is something that's being trialled in soccer in the Premier League at the moment, or maybe it's the FA Cup. But either way, like it gets rid of that bravado, you know, that I'm going to play on because we can't make another sub. We've already used all of our substitutes. So having that concussion sub gets rid of that element that people are trying to play on because they feel they have to for their teammates. And if anything good comes from Johnny Sexton's story coming into the public consciousness this week, is that concussion is again being spoken about. And there's a few pieces across the back page of this morning.
Yeah, I just look at the stat there. I found it there. A University of Glasgow study in 2017 found that former footballers were 3 times more likely to develop dementia than the ordinary population, something thrown into sharp relief by the number of England's 1966 World Cup winners who have had the condition. And I know all sports are getting better at it now. Like I was involved on a committee in the GAA where we put a lot of work into concussion protocols and educating people what the signs and symptoms of concussion are. And so what the main message out of it was is that if you feel in any way not right, it probably is concussion, and you need to exit yourself until we know absolutely for sure that it isn't, and you need to mind your head. But the next stage now is, like Hector said, is like just this culture of people not wanting to let the team down and wanting to play on and man up and woman up through it. That can't go on, because like it's not worth risking your mental health and your mind and your brain and your brain health for kicking a ball over a bar or under a bar or into a line.
Yeah, hear, hear. Definitely. It's worth mentioning as well, just while we're on the rugby, before we move away from it as well, Hugh Farrelly's piece in the Irish Mail on Sunday, which he touches on the Irish appointment of Andy Farrell by David Nusifora. Again, another man who gets another mention in the papers today. And he says, you know, Declan Kidney and Joe Schmidt got the Ireland job by winning the revered European Cup with Munster and Leinster respectively, and then winning it again. In 2018, Leo Cullen and Stuart Lancaster guided Leinster to European glory, while masterminding an operation that has become the envy of clubs across the Northern Hemisphere and beyond. So he's the headline of Hugh Farrelly's piece, "There is a way out of this mess, these two," and a photograph of Leinster head coach Leo Cullen and Stuart Lancaster, which is interesting. And you might think, look, on the day of a game against France, a big game, to be highlighting how maybe these two could do a better job is interesting, but maybe he's got a point.
Maybe he does, but also, like, has anybody even asked these two if they want it? Maybe they don't.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. They have to accept the job as well. We should probably move on to the football. There's loads of Jurgen Klopp stories in the papers this morning, and I guess if you're a Liverpool fan waking up today, it's when you have the excitement of a title run. I know you're a Manchester United fan, Hector, so you'll have no sympathy for them. But when you've had a title run like that last year, and a team that the year before won the Champions League and under Jurgen Klopp has been so dominant, to see them have this downward spiral over recent games, and look, granted, they're still not necessarily out of a title race, but it's heading that direction, and the conversation seems to have turned to, can they even get in the top four this season? And Eamon Sweeney has a piece on the back of the Sunday Independent, which is one of the many pieces around Jurgen Klopp. Where has it all gone wrong for Klopp? And he suggests, you know, the home support. I've seen this idea peddled in recent weeks as well, that no team suffered more from the loss of home support than Liverpool, because at no other ground was the bond between players and fans such a palpable thing. Is that a fair point, Hector?
First of all, the WhatsApp banter between Liverpool and Man United fans has never been so fervent in the last 6 weeks. I mean, to see where Manchester United have sort of climbed back, getting knocked out by Leipzig, and the rise of Man United again, in some ways, not always, but the fall of Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool has been, five losses in 8 Premier games, or 6 and 10, or whatever it is at the moment. Eamon Sweeney's piece touches on it, goes right back to March when they lost against Atletico Madrid. Atletico Madrid are just those cagey, canny, they were like foxes waiting in the long grass, waiting for the hounds to pass. And then they pounced and they beat them on the counter-attack. And he says that when Robert Firmino gave him the lead in the 4th minute of extra time, they looked like they got through. But he says the most jarring thing that night was that how tired they looked. And he goes through the stats and stuff. And I suppose I love my soccer, and we watch an awful lot in the house, and we are Man United fans in the house. But it seems to me that he's gone to the well so often with that straight 11 over three years solid. That 11 has brought him so much glory. The three boys up front look tired. They're on about Mane come back from the African Cup of Nations, and then he used them again for another game. And the loss of form of Eamon Sweeney writes of last season, Alexander Arnold, who was 13 with a record 13 assists from defender, and Robinson with 12 were second behind De Bruyne in the league rankings. I mean, the loss of form of the front three, the loss of form of Trent Alexander and Robinson. But what I find is that it's just the lack of depth in squad. And because games are coming thick and fast every 3 days, it's the rotation and the bringing in the new players. And I just don't think the Jota injury was a big thing. Obviously Van Dijk, but it's the lack of squad and playing James Milner and putting Henderson in the back. It's just a strange place for Liverpool fans now. The writing was on the wall coming through Christmas, but it is disintegrated now. And yesterday's defeat was another hard one for them to take. I mean, the squad is not there, the depth in squad, and it's an interesting one. And then the rise of Manchester City, and a player who has to be on everybody's lips at the moment is Gundogan, and the goals he's scoring. It's unbelievable the way Man City have risen as well.
Yeah, if you have Gundogan in your fantasy team, you're getting a few points this week.
Yeah, sure. How many goals is he scoring? Like, he's the goal yesterday from the keeper, the ball over the top for the Man City game. They just dismantled Spurs. But we could talk all day about the Premier League, because the games are coming thick and fast. I mean, Spurs have gone to the dogs. Chelsea have gone to the dogs. Brendan Rodgers getting no credit at Leicester. Like, what a team Brendan Rodgers. Brendan Rodgers has done superbly well with his team, even when Vardy's not playing. But that Barnes, Madison, it's just an incredible team. They're playing at pace and power. And things didn't go right for Liverpool yesterday, but the three boys up front looked tired. And then the two lads and the two attacking fullbacks, you take them that ammunition out of Liverpool at the moment, and the centre-back injuries, they're really in a difficult place.
Yeah, a really nice quote from Eamon Sweeney as well, saying, "No other champions won their title in circumstances like this. After all the effort they'd put in, the players must have felt a bit like the Scott expedition did when reaching the South Pole, only to find Roald Amundsen had got there first. COVID had planted its flag on the season," which is an interesting line, that almost there's an asterisk on anyone who has picked up any trophies in a truncated season, which is maybe a fair point, but Liverpool fans won't accept it. Mortras, I wanted to get your thoughts as well on while we're on him and Sweeney. He's got a piece on Tom Brady as well. Brady leads a week of vintage displays that prove there's plenty of life in these old dogs. So he talks about Tom Brady's reeling in the years performance, I guess, 43 years of age, winning another Super Bowl with Tampa Bay Buccaneers, beating the Kansas City Chiefs in that Super Bowl in Tampa, Florida. And then he goes through a few other, I guess, old-timers, for want of a better phrase, at the top of their game at the moment. So he mentions 38-year-old James Anderson, the cricketer. Wes Houlihan, of course, our own legend. Wes Houlihan, who is tearing things up for Cambridge in League Two. He was League Two Player of the Month.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, it's incredible. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Manny Pacquiao. He goes through a few here. Are we going to get to the stage, as someone who works in medicine, Mortrasa, where in the 2090 World Cup we have 65-year-olds playing?
No.
Science, no. Sports science is, there's a reason the likes of Zlatan Ibrahimovic can kick someone in the head, because he's so acrobatic. These guys are freaks of nature.
They're not freaks of nature. What they are very toned from day one and well looked after and minded with the best of staff around them. But like this whole enigma of Tom Brady, I mean, people say she's obviously not a fan of American football, that she's going to just say what I'm about to say now. And it's true. I'm not a fan. I've tried to get into it. I've gone to games and I've been in the US. They go on for far too long. I can't concentrate. I love that people love it and people get into it. And some people wear a big bit lumps of cheese on their head. But I can't get beyond that. And I've tried. I've tried to love it. I've tried to love the enigma of Tom Brady. But I'm thinking, are you really expecting me to believe that, you know, not eating tomatoes and not eating mushrooms and following a diet and following a regime, you know, that was given to him by a questionable doctor? And then also, what's his job? And he does it very well, the job that he does. He's well protected. He doesn't get involved in the rough and tumble. He has a great throwing arm. He has a great vision and he has a great eye. And he throws the ball to exactly the right space. But it's made very easy.
That's not easily done.
No, but it's made very easy for him. And what I'm saying, that he's well protected and the system around him is built to keep Tom Brady doing that very well. That's what I'm saying. And what I'm saying is, out of all the jobs you could be doing in American football, it's probably the one that you could be doing the longest. Now, on the other hand, they have huge pressures. If they misfire, maybe after two games they're gone, their careers are over. He hasn't misfired. But I would imagine a lot of that maybe is to do with mental rather than, you know, his physical skill. And just the fact the enigma has built so much now that brings a level of performance because people expect it of him. And the path is paved for him. And his opponents are probably very aware of this when they're doing it as well.
He's mentioned Mickey Linden as well as a perfect example, playing club football for Mayo Bridge at the age of 55, just 3 years ago.
I'm Mickey Linden, boy. And Nudie Hughes played till he's 50, didn't he?
He probably did. He won about 10 county championships with Castleglenny Foggs. He was some
Mickey
operator.
Linden, wow.
I can sit here talking about Nudie Hughes for an hour if you want. We can just do a whole pay-per-view on Nudie.
Like, I think we're all getting fitter into our old age. Use the word old in quotation marks, because we now understand the importance of it. And when you look back to our parents when they were our age, they probably weren't as active as we are today. And we'll probably all be more active into our older years because we know the importance of it and we appreciate it. And the life we live now allows that time. And we understand the importance of team sports or whatever it is you're doing, or walking or running or whatever. So, yeah, you're going to have more and more people playing football and playing sport into older age. But still, like, genetics are against you. Like, when we were first born in this world, I think we weren't really meant to go beyond the age of 30. And women are still, in particular, feeling the effects of that because we go into menopause and then our bones start to break up and stuff like that. Like, we're not meant to live into our 90s in general. So the human race is doing great things. And out of the human race, we're all doing great things in general. There'll be one or two, like Tom Brady's and stuff, and Mickey Linden and Nudie Hughes, who will do great things for longer. But it's because of a whole mixture of variables. It's not just because they're great. It's because things fell into place. It's because of where they lived. It's because of the lifestyle they lived. It's because they had a natural talent that possibly wasn't nurtured as much by other people around them. you know. Whereas now, if a kid is good at football or hurling, sure, he's in a development squad at under sevens and he's carried all the way along. Whereas back in the day, there might be one lad who was excellent. He kept being excellent. Nobody else bothered to be excellent, so he looked amazing.
Yeah,
all over the country, there's superb junior footballers in junior A, B and C playing well into their 50s. And no, they don't get any credit.
Yeah.
What did you make of, just to switch tack a little bit, and it's mentioned in a couple of pieces almost as an opening line, not as a piece itself. Roy Keane joining Instagram. This is the 2021 peak moment, I think. This is not
with his Alsatian one photo. It was a crazy photo. It's like he was in Siberia or somewhere.
Man's best friend, I think, was the caption he went with. This is the last thing I expected Roy Keane to ever do. This broke the internet a bit, I think.
I stood more intrigues, you know. I was awful shame it wasn't a photo of him intrigues, but why? I suppose I'd love to know why. Is he doing it for divilment, or is there a bigger plan, or I don't know. It seems the most un-Roy Keane like thing to do ever.
Mm. It's extraordinary.
It's very interesting if you follow Carragher and Neville avidly for the last couple of years on Twitter, and they do have awful fun, awful banter between them. Just on a side note, Phil Neville's son is tearing it up in the under-23 leagues for Man United. He scored at the weekend. They've scored 15 goals in 3 games, and there's some really exciting players coming through. But Phil Neville's son is playing right full, and he looks very, very good. He scored last night, so there's an interesting thing, keeping the Neville dynasty alive.
Yeah, some top players, Shola Shortire and Joe Hugel and Amad Diallo, and there's a lot of guys.
And Hannibal, have you seen the hair on the United winger called
the young French guy, Hannibal Mejri, yeah. Incredible.
That magnificent hair needs to be in the Premiership. it's like Lenny Kravitz. If you think of Lenny Kravitz in its heyday with that amazing frizzy afro, we need that. We need that on Burnley on a Tuesday night in the middle of winter.
Couldn't agree more. And I think the way hairdressers are closed, that would be pretty easy to organise these days. Yeah,
absolutely. It's extraordinary.
Are we still talking soccer? Because I know we mentioned the Bamford. There's a Bamford piece on... And it's great. I mean, we all know Leeds. I remember seeing Leeds a couple of times when they used to play in the Premier League, and I was over watching Man United, the War of the Roses. Leeds had come down. It was one of those great rivalries. I love Leeds. I love Bielsa. I love the way Bielsa can stay down in his hunkers. As they say in Irish, on your gugaja, go she said the gugaja, go down in your hunkers. He can stay in his hunkers for 90 minutes with no fatigue, which just shows he's amazing ties and amazing calves. I know he paces 13 to the left and 13 to the right, but his Leeds team are just brilliant to watch, whatever week you watch them. And his man up front, there's a lovely piece by Oliver Holt on page 68 of the Irish Mail. And one coach said he was impressed by how hard he worked since his dad was a billionaire. It's a great insight into Patrick Bamford. He was interviewed last week when he scored a couple of goals, and he just said, yes, I really enjoyed those goals. He just didn't want to be there, but he's just soft-spoken, well-spoken. And it says here, Oliver Holt writes, the distrust of Bamford as a footballer was more than the chances that he could have missed when he arrived in the Premier League with Leeds United and Marco Bielsa. It was the way he ran, the way he spoke, and where he came from. It was the fact that he once turned down a place at Harvard University that he could play a musical instrument and speak a second language. He's a good-looking chap. He looks like he should be playing polo or something like that. But he's a great centre forward in the old vein of English centre forwards, and I'm delighted for him because he's been there for a long time, and I think he's showing how good he is at the moment in this Leeds side.
I think Mortrasse definitely. I know it's one that caught your eye as well, and it highlights the piece by Oliver Holt highlights these stereotypes of posh people, and Graeme Lasseau is mentioned as an example of someone who we all had assumptions, maybe because of the way he spoke, sometimes it's because of the way they dress, but he talks about that one coach saying his dad was a billionaire, when in fact his dad is an architect from Newark. So I guess these ideas of that people had of Patrick Bamford when they hear him speak, and even he talks about private school in this interview, there was always that stigma, because I went to private school, people assume I've never had to work for anything, which is total nonsense. They think everything comes easy to you and that you take everything for granted. There is this misconception that I'm a really posh guy. The truth is, I'm not. Really interesting piece, Mortrasse.
Yeah, it was. And it's funny, you know, just to pick up on Hector picking up on his speaking two languages. I think everywhere in the world, you're seen as posh if you speak two languages, unless you're in Ireland, where we're looked down upon if we speak two languages, where you're obviously backward if you speak Gaelic first. But I thought it was very interesting as well. Yeah, the reverse stereotyping is strong in this piece. Like, I what struck out to me was, it wasn't an issue at Burnley until I started asking why I wasn't playing, Bamford says. And then the manager started citing other reasons. Born with a silver spoon in your mouth, listening to too many people influencing you outside of football. When I asked for an example, the answer was, who did you arrive with when you signed on your first day? I said, my mum and dad. And he said, exactly. Then I started getting defensive. I didn't think that was right. I mean, that's madness. I mean, rule of sports psychology 101 is when you're trying to get players to perform and get the best out of them is say, get your support bubble, have your friends and family. It's great to have your parents on board, but not in English football, apparently, where God forbid a parent might step in every once in a while and look after their child's welfare. I just couldn't get over the reverse stereotyping in this. I didn't realise he had gone through this. And I know when you say gone through it, it's not a terrible experience compared to discrimination. Other footballers have gone through racism and stuff, but it was just a really interesting piece. And even the preconceptions, oh, your man goes to private school, we don't know what's paying for that. Like, he says that, you know, his parents had to work really hard and went without other things to put him to that school. Is that right? I don't know. That was a choice the parents made in parenting, and I'm sure they'd say it's paid off, and I'm sure he'd say it's, well, it's horses for courses, and us making assumptions on people based on what we think we know just goes to show sometimes it blows up in your face, Bamford style.
Yeah, the assumptions kind of often circle around South Dublin's rugby scene as well. That video that went kind of viral online last weekend of the Blackrock College slow-mo kind of description by the former students, which people kind of take the mickey out of it a little bit, but it is a... Patrick Bamford's raised some awareness of it here. And if multilingual skills are the definition of poshness, then I'm speaking to two very, very posh people today, because more trust.
Even the whole, you know, the whole stereotyping about people who go to Gaelic school and how the way it's done now, it's for Southside Dubs to send their kids to get to private school without paying private school fees. The first Gaelic school was created in Ballymun or Talla and vice versa. Mm. They were the first two in the country. And they were created by Irish speakers who were being let down by the Irish system, trying to make sure that their kids had an opportunity to speak Gaelic. And it's just funny how it's just evolved now to nearly like, oh, sure, your man goes to a Gael school. I mean, notional or what? You couldn't get less notional than a Gael goer. Like, no. We are the poorest of the poor living on a stone in the west of Ireland.
Prefabs. Every Gael school started in a prefab and then
like
just worked hard.
Teaches Parent in a Gael power. School in County Kildare, where the former principal there, he worked for free for the first year, didn't take a penny because the school had to be established for a year so the Department of Education would have to fund it. So the man worked for a year without a wage just to make sure there was an option for kids to get educated at Gaelic. Just think sometimes like the reverse snobbery is hilarious, and more than Bamford, people just don't actually understand the work that goes on in the background. This was a guy who worked very hard, not so much a silver spoon, but just use the opportunities a bit of silver gave him, I suppose, is the way to put it.
We're quickly running.
They're playing Arsenal today, Leeds versus yes. Arsenal. That'd be a good game. But you can see Bamford moving off the shoulder of David Luiz and scoring a couple of goals, can't you?
Oh, big time. He's in my fantasy team.
Absolutely. I really like him. I like him as a centre forward. I like his movement. I like the goals he scored. And he scored 12 this season. He's not getting enough credit. I mean, it all goes to Fernandes and Gundogan and all these and Foden. I can't read any more about Foden. Yes, he's brilliant at the moment. But there are other players playing really, really well. And Bamford's one of them.
Yeah, fair
can
point.
I be a pain and jump in very quickly, Shane, before
fire
you
away.
Try and wrap us up? Because I know you've loads. I just think a good story in as well, and we didn't talk about it. It's in the Times with the FAI struggling to find a new sponsor. And I just think it's mad that in this day and age, a national team is still struggling with a sponsor. It seems there were negotiations with Paddy Power, back and forth. And now it seems they have pulled out. I just think it's interesting in this day and age where, you know, football carries so much value and so many eyes on it that our national team in the jersey is struggling to get a sponsor on it. I just think it's interesting.
Yeah, definitely worth a mention. FAI in debt, of course, to the tune of around €70 million after those John Delaney years. So definitely that's a piece in page five. The Sunday Times sports section. There's loads of other pieces we should have got to as well. Like there's the John Walters wants the PFA top job. Really good piece in the Sunday Times on that. A piece on the city keeper, Edgerson. We spoke about the favourite goalkeepers of all time with the goalkeepers panel on the Saturday panel yesterday. Was there any other piece before we go that we want to get to? I know there was the Maiden All-Stars.
Can I mention one thing? There's a small little piece on Nadia Powers, this brilliant 800 metre runner who's doing all the right things. She smashed her personal or fastest career best yesterday indoors in Belgium. Nadia Power won the 800 metres yesterday in Belgium. TG Cahara live at race and from on TV today. Another feather in the cap of TG Cahara live in the afternoon. If you're not watching rugby, you can turn on some top quality racing from TG Cahara from Punchestown.
Yeah, really good stuff in the Mail on Sunday as well. Chatting to Aisling McCarthy with the AFLW in
absolutely
Australia.
Serious coverage.
It's incredible. And they're about to go pro potentially. And she talks about how her teammates are in regular jobs. Some of them, she says, are our captain Emma Swanson is actually a firefighter, and she was on call for the bushfires in Western Australia during the week. She's a great person. It's kind of inspirational when sometimes she comes into training and, you know, she has been off on an all-night shift or been called out in a dangerous situation. Really puts things in perspective. And a lot of those Irish girls are doing incredible things and should give a kudos to TG Cahara, since we've mentioned them, for airing a lot of these games down under as well, which is going to give a lot of young people, and especially young girls in Ireland. You probably saw the Lidl ad as well, the level of playing field.
That's a great ad up the hill.
Incredible.
Great ad.
Really well put together. There's a great piece
as
well.
Did they ever play in Redmoor? Do you know the field in Redmoor, Tommy?
Yeah, there's plenty.
Or Tommy, sorry, Hector, did Freudian slip there, where, you know, normally you choose which side when the referee is doing the toss, do you play into the wind or without? In Redmoor, you're deciding, will I play up the hill or down the hill for the first
time? Yeah, it's a great ad. But no, the amount that we were talking about it before we came on air, the amount of girls playing down under, and the Considine girls and Clare, there's so many of them down there and playing at the top level. I think it's brilliant. They're exploding and it's they're taking over the game down there, which is brilliant, and you can see it live on TG Cahara.
Absolutely. And Philip Lanigan is a piece I should mention as well, how it all began for the All-Stars. So definitely a piece worth, I'll go this way, checking out. The awards are 50 years old, and the players who went on its maiden tour recall an epic adventure to San Francisco, to casinos in Nevada. Some really good chats with Damian Martin, the former Offaly keeper, is mentioned. Tony McTighe is mentioned. Tom Hayes. Loads of really great stories in that. And when they get off the plane in San Francisco, a couple of the lads weren't sure who was picking them up. He says, one fella was there with a torn sleeve and a hole in the knee of his pants. I said to Anne, I think we're heading for him. Sure enough, we got this fella. His name was Tom Hayes, a plastering contractor from Ballingarry in Limerick. He had come to the States about 30 years prior to that. He was a millionaire. You wouldn't think it, as someone said. He didn't have the arse in his trousers. So some really good stories from Philip Lanigan there in the Mail on Sunday. Hector, before we finish, the podcast, the Tommy and Hector podcast with Lorita Blewett, as we mentioned earlier, filmed in Tommy's shed every Thursday, I think. And it's kept me company on the drive up from Monaghan to the office a number of times. I feel like someone who recommends Breaking Bad in 2017 or 2018, that I'm way behind the curve here. I'm only 7 or 8 episodes in, but I'm sure you have a lot of fun putting those podcasts together.
Yeah, I mean, we were only saying the other day, if the pandemic wasn't here, if the virus hadn't come, we wouldn't have been doing this podcast. So I suppose 99% of my work has stopped in my business. But the podcast, it's like going to a double free class on a Friday morning with one of your mates, and you meet them just outside school, and we have a double free class every Tuesday. And it's good crack. There's good stories, and it's putting a smile in people's ears. And I think that's a very important thing to say, that I think we're saturated now with our mobiles and devices, especially in lockdown, and that we need to get out. But we also need, if we can capture your ear for an hour every Thursday, whether you're walking the pitch or you're out doing a jog or you're in the car or it's in the kitchen, and we can take you away with a bit of laughter, a bit of smiling. And I'm just over the moon that so many people are enjoying it and having a good laugh on a Thursday when it comes out.
Yeah, fair play. Keep up the great work, because I've been in stitches laughing, getting some funny looks at the traffic lights when I've been laughing.
Laughter is good, Shane.
It's
laughter
great.
Is good.
Get it all out. It's fantastic. Well, listen, Hector O'Hookagon and Mór Trasna Cali. Mór, keep up the great work with the front lines, and I hope the second stage of that AstraZeneca jab doesn't have any repercussions or any negative feelings. There's no more pain. It's great that you've got vaccinated, and hopefully we'll all get there in the coming months. So.
We will all get there this time next year.
Here we go.
Distant memory, and I'll be back on the sideline frozen. Hector will be trying to find time to record his podcast. Tommy will be better. Tommy, I think he's calling you Tommy, Shane. I don't know. you'll be back wishing you were spending more time in Monaghan, and we all say, God, I wish we appreciated lockdown more. That's life. We just got to keep turning and try and find the smiles when we can.
Exactly. Well, listen, Hedro Hockagon and Mortras Nicali, thank you very much for your time. If you haven't got the full podcast there, if you want to listen back to it, it's on the OTB Sports app. You'll get that in the iOS and Android stores as well for free. You can listen back on otbsports.com and, of course, on youtube.com/offtheball as you can for every single week of the Sunday Paper Review podcast here in Off the Ball. We're back on air very shortly at 1 o'clock, 1 to 7 p.m. Two live commentary games in the Premier League, all the updates from Ireland against France. So it's all to come. But that was your Sunday Paper Review for this Valentine's Day, February the 14th.
The Sunday Papers on Off the Ball.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.